Going Linux, episode 57, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom.
Going Linux is designed to provide you with practical, day-to-day advice on how to use Linux and Linux applications to get things done. If you are new to Linux, moving to Linux, or just thinking about going Linux, then this podcast is for you.
Each month, we publish three episodes. We start the month with a listener feedback episode, like this one. In these episodes, we read listener email, play listener-generated audio, if we have it, and answer listener questions. On the third Tuesday of each month, Larry appears live on the Computer America radio show, and we post those shows, minus the commercials, as Going Linux episodes.
In our user experience episodes, we normally take 2 months to explore a topic related to Linux. During the first month, we introduce the topic for new Linux users and recent converts. During month two, we discuss the same topic from a more advanced perspective for users building their confidence and competence with Linux.
In today's episode, as always, we have lots of listener feedback. We hope you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
Hey, Tom, before we begin reading our listener feedback, I would like to introduce something new for our listener feedback episodes.
Oh, sure. Throw me a curve right at the top. Okay, what is it?
Well, many of our listeners have made suggestions for topics that we could discuss on the show.
Okay.
I'd like to give everyone an easy-to-use method of getting those show suggestions to us quickly, easily, and maybe with a little bit of fun.
Oh, you got my attention. What do you have in mind?
Well, beginning right away, I would like our listeners to begin putting topic suggestions for our show as comments in our listing on Podcast Alley.
Hey, that works for me, and that way all the suggestions will be in one place over on Podcast Alley, and everyone can see the list, right?
Right, and maybe even more importantly, we can pick a topic from the list on a regular basis, crediting the person who made the suggestion and cover that topic on our show.
Okay, great, but to clarify, we're not running out of topics. We got a lot of topics, but this would be a great way to cover the topics that our listeners want and suggest. So, how does someone create a Podcast Alley comment, Larry?
Well, it's really easy, Tom. You just go to our website, goinglinux.com, click on the red and black Podcast Alley button on the left-hand side of the page.
And if we pick your topic, you will get the coveted Going Linux refrigerator magnet, which we haven't invented yet.
And, that was and a isn't lie. Available, even on a limited basis.
Right. Anyway, that link on our homepage says, vote monthly for Going Linux at Podcast Alley.
Right. And that, when you click on it, takes you directly to our listing on the Podcast Alley site. Right at the top of that site, under Actions, you click the Vote link. And then, in the window that opens up, enter your email address and a comment and click the Vote button.
Okay, but why the email address? Are they going to send a newsletter or something?
No, they don't do that. The email address is to prevent automated spam posting on the Podcast Alley site. They want to know that it's a real live human being posting the comment. They'll send you an email with a link you can click to confirm that you sent the comment. And after you do that, your comment appears on the site. No spam, no email, no newsletter. Well, just that one email just to give you the opportunity to confirm that you sent the comment.
And that you're not a dead human being.
Yes, yes. You've got to be a live human being to do this.
No dead people allowed.
Right.
Okay, great. But one more thought. Podcast Alley only lets you vote once a month. So if you have more than one suggestion for the month, you can use the comment button for the additional suggestions. What comment button?
Oh, there's a comment button right below the vote button.
Oh, yeah, there it is. And, of course, if you prefer to send us an email or audio comment with your topic suggestions, we still welcome those, too.
Yes, we do. And, hey, Tom, speaking of audio comments, we have some this time.
Oh, listener feedback? Audio?
Yes.
Oh, play the applause. And our studio audience is going nuts. Okay, let's hear the first one.
Okay.
Hello, Going in Linux guys. This is Brother Red. Just got a question for you here. After 6 years of Linux use, and I'm still the perpetual new user, I think. Maybe that's a good attitude to have. But it's not necessarily taken willingly. What is up with the all the recursive acronyms? I tend to think there's so much recursive folklore or recursivity, if that's a word, in the community, that it's probably because recursiveness in the or recursive utility, a recursive argument in the command line, in the various Unixes and Unix-like software, is very powerful. But I'm not really sure, and I'm just wondering, how did this come about, and am I on the right track? Anyway, this is Brother Red signing off. Thank you, Going Linux guys. Bye.
Thanks for the email and for the audio file, Brother Red. Well, according to Wikipedia, recursive acronyms are, quote, acronyms and abbreviations that referred humorously to themselves or to other abbreviations, unquote. They began as a humorous practice that has become somewhat of a tradition among writers of software. The mythology, in part, is because of the fact that computer hackers in the good sense, began the tradition in the early days of computing. At least I think that's what's going on there. Thanks again for your contribution to the show, Brother Red.
Yeah, it's kind of an inside joke. For instance, the W in wine stands for wine. W-I-N-E, I believe, is wine is not an emulator.
Right.
And it's an inside joke. It's, you know, it's not a knee slapper, a belly thumper. It's just a sort of little inside joke.
Yeah, just a little amusing.
And thanks for that audio comment, Brother Ed.
Next, Kyle sent us an audio file as well.
Oh, and the studio audience goes nuts again.
Hey, Larry. Hey, Tom. This is Kyle from Indiana. You guys said you didn't get many audio comments, so I figured, what the heck, right? Might as well give it a shot, right? I'm actually a high school student, so I don't know how many of your audience members are high school students, but just letting you know. But I actually just started recently listening to your podcast, and I'm actually quite interested in it. I've used Linux a few times before. I now am booting in a virtual machine with it. I don't really feel the need to boot it yet with my other hardware, but I'm still using it quite a lot. I use Linux Mint and the Go OS or the Google OS, whatever it's called. But I use those two. And, well, I just started listening to your show recently, and it's pretty interesting. It's fun to listen to. It's not bogged down with all those, I'm not going to say boring, but not interesting information. But you guys do get into the geek sometimes, which I like. But I was just going to let you know you guys are doing a good job. Keep up the good work. All right, bye.
Thanks, Kyle. And Kyle also mentioned that he is the owner of kptechblog.com. That's kptechblog, all one word, .com. It's a really nice looking blog site, Kyle. How did you do that? Is that Drupal or what?
Yeah, I kind of think it might be.
It looks very, very polished.
It does. It looks really good. And I particularly like his post on Linux fans can get a little defensive.
Yeah, no kidding. He makes a good point there. We'll have a link in the show notes to his blog and his post.
Now, let's get into our email. First, listener Ryan has written us several times in the past. In our last episode, he let us know about his adventures putting Linux on his girlfriend Snook's laptop. We didn't get into everything in his email, so Tom, let's read the rest now.
Okay, well, Ryan continued from the last time. Two more things, if I may. You may.
Mm-hmm.
I've run into a problem. I want to record sound as I play it. In Windows, I select to record from the mix channel, but I can't get anything here. I'm lost. Please help. And then second, if I may share some software picks, you may. I needed Ubuntu Tweak. Very needed for media repositories and codecs, apps all in one place. Avidamux, needed to encode video. Handbrake, for DVDs to video. DVD, now that's the name of a package spelled D-E-V-E-D-E, which is kind of fun to say. Once more, D-E-V-E-D-E, for video to DVD. And acetone, SO2, to read CD, DVD image formats. That's the only other software I needed. And with them, there is nothing left in Windows that I need. I'm completely Linux-based now. Yay! Anyhow, thank you, Larry and Tom. Looking forward to your networking episode. Keep it up, guys. And he signs Ryan Cross. Thanks, Ryan.
Yes, thanks, Ryan. And you can tell that this is an older email since we've already had the networking episode. Ryan, many of the sound recording controls are available in the sound mixer. Since you're using Ubuntu, let's cover the steps you'll need to use. Other distributions will be similar, if not identical. You right-click the volume icon in the notification area of the panel and select Open Volume Control. Click the Preferences button. You'll see that there are many different inputs and outputs that you can control from your mixer in Linux. You can choose to display any number of them by checking the ones that you'd like to control. Once you've done that, you'll probably see on the main volume control dialog box that some of these are muted or the volume turned all the way down. One of these might just allow you to record sound as you play it.
And bear in mind and well that you will likely have more than one sound device connected to your computer. The device for playback can be different from the device for recording, so you choose your device from the drop-down list in the volume control panel and set your preferences for each one separately.
Yes, and if you use Audacity to do the recording, you should look at its preferences under the Audio I/O section. Audacity provides two checkboxes in the playthrough category to help you with what you're trying to do. One is labeled Play Other Tracks While Recording New One, and the other is Software Playthrough Play New Track While Recording It. If I remember correctly, it's that last one that you're going to want. I have an external mixer here that we use in the Going Linux studio, so I haven't been using that setting at all.
And you do all the production for the episode, so I don't use that setting either.
Right.
One thing to remember, Audacity, at least in my experience, does not play well with other applications that are using a sound device. When I first start Audacity, if I've got a just about anything that uses audio running, Audacity won't record. So, I don't know what that is. It's a quirk with Audacity under Linux, and I can't tell you what to do about it.
Yeah, I've noticed that same thing, Tom, and I usually am able to get Audacity recording when something else is running, as long as I'm using a different sound device for Audacity than the other program. And so, if you only have one sound card, and you don't have any other audio devices, then you won't be able to use Audacity with something else. You'll have to turn off whatever the other thing is that's running, like Skype or your music player or whatever else that might be.
You just explained it much better than I did. Thank you.
Our next email is from Tony, a listener from the Computer America show. Tony wrote us, "Hi, guys."
Hi, Tony.
Help. No sound. Does that sound familiar? So, in my frustration, I went in and uninstalled KMix. How do you reinstall it? Please be gentle. I have a peanut for a brain. Is this the main nerve center for sound? I have Linux 64. Regards, Tony from Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
Thanks, Tony. And we wrote Tony back with this advice. The easiest way is to go to the Package Manager, Adept if you're using KDE, and search for KMix. Click on it and choose to install it. Apply the updates and you're back in business. And let us know if you have any trouble with that.
And Tony did respond to us. He said, "Hi again. I got KMix back in business, but when I right-click on KMix, it's checked as sound being muted, and I can't unmute it. I'm playing your Computer America show from this past Tuesday. The visualization is playing. The sound says it's playing, but I'm still not getting any sound. At this point, I'm not sure now if it's KMix because there's nothing muted anywhere in the whole system. I guess I'm giving you a challenge on this one. At any rate, I'm still religiously going to listen to your podcast. You and Tom are the greatest. Oh, by the way, I'm the same guy that couldn't get into the Computer America chat line. Regards, Tony."
Yep, Tony still got some trouble there, so we wrote back to him. It's possible that KMix is showing something other than the master sound control. To fix it, right-click the KMix icon in the panel. Choose Select Master Channel, and then wait for a minute or two for the dialog box to display. Choose the Master Radio button, and click OK. And now try to unmute. If, on the other hand, that's not the problem, here's something else that might help. Right-click the KMix icon, and this time select Show Mixer Window. Choose Settings, and then Configure KMix. Uncheck the box labeled Restore Volumes on Login. This prevents KMix from remembering the previous settings when you log off and back in. Then log off and back in. I'm hoping that's going to cause it to forget that everything was muted.
So Tony responded back to us with his final response. Not that he passed away or anything, it's just that this is the last time he got back to us on this. He said, "Hi guys, happy, happy, joy, joy to both of you. My audio is back. I inadvertently went to ALSA and monkeyed around with the settings, thinking it was a player. I found out that ALSA was the nerve center for the computer's sound. So much for my peanut brain. I will be sending you another email. Hope you can help me with this one. All the best, Tony." One final note. Tony also mentioned that he was having trouble getting onto the Computer America chat. I had mentioned in my last appearance on Computer America that I've written an article for Linux users who are having this very problem. So we'll include a link to that article in the show notes. But for those of you following along at home, the link is goinglinux.com/articles/addonchat.html.
Okay, and next, our regular listener, AJ, wrote to us in one of his emails a while back about a volume control problem he was having. He said the volume control inside Linux isn't working. Inside programs, it does, like Amarok or MPlayer or VLC. But the master control doesn't work. Any advice? Thanks, AJ.
And I wrote AJ back letting him know that I found a post on volume problems. And although I had no idea whether this was going on with AJ's computer, I sent him the link. The guy from the forum had two identical computers with identical setups. One played audio fine. And on the other, the volume control didn't work. This is his last post where he discovered the solution, at least one that worked for him. Now, let me read from his post. "To those with a similar sound scenario, I eventually found a combination of settings which solved microphone and other problems. In volume control, edit, preferences, channel mode activated and set to two channels. Settings under System, Preferences, Sound also changed." And he provided a screenshot, which we will include a link to in our show notes. And he wraps up saying, "Thanks for the assistance."
And that fixed AJ's problem, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote back, "Hey, Larry, thanks a lot. I had checked the forms previously, but to no avail. I monkeyed with it a little, and it's working now. I can finally control the volume again through the computer, which is exactly what I wanted. I would put that on a listener feedback episode, because that helped me a ton. I was on the wrong device, which explains a lot. Anyway, thanks. Talk to you later. AJ." Thanks, AJ.
Thanks. Listener Jason wrote to us. "Hi, Larry and Tom." Hi, Jason.
Hi, Jason.
"Pretty good show. I just..." Pretty good? Hey.
Pretty good.
Hey. Okay. Anyway, we'll accept that. "I just discovered it, and I'm catching up. In episode 20, time code 11 minutes and 8 seconds, Going Linux minion Bill..." Hey, we've got minions. "Talks about syncing bookmarks across browsers, OSs, etc. Why bother? Just use chipmark.com tools. Chipmark.com is a password-secured bookmark storage site located in the cloud. They have plugins for both Internet Explorer and Firefox, or IceWeasel, that let you bookmark page URLs to the cloud and access it from anywhere else. Even work. If work won't let you grab the plugin, just log into your bin on their website and double-click on your desired site. Quick corollary, chipmark.com is for URLs, but there's also a good password-secured cloud-based option for storing a snapshot of whole pages, images intact. Furl.net has saved my bacon more than once," and he spells Furl, F-U-R-L.net.
Okay.
"Has saved my bacon more than once. Most recently, when trying to find Stanton Finley's last Fedora setup how-to, it was no longer hosted, but my Furl.net snapshot had everything there, including the original URL and save date. Good for if you need to track bibliography information. Of course, please just throw a chair or something at me if you've already been over this. Cheers, gents. Malcor the Techie."
Thanks, Malcor the Techie. And no, we haven't covered it, believe it or not. Thanks for the link. There's been a lot happening in this area since we recorded episode 20. I only have the one computer, so I really don't need a bookmark synchronizer. As far as viewing pages that are not on the web anymore, another great resource is the Wayback Machine at archive.org. Go check that out. And it's interesting to look at what pages looked like 5 years ago.
Right.
Or more. It's pretty cool. And Larry, I imagine you do use a synchronizer of some sort, right?
Yes, I have multiple computers at home and at work, and I find a bookmark synchronizer to be an invaluable tool. The bookmark synchronizer plugin I use for Firefox is called Foxmarks. It sounds like the Chipmark utility is similar, with the added bonus of working in Internet Explorer as well. Thanks, Malcor.
Next up, listener John from the UK writes us, "Hi, Larry and Tom."
Hi, John.
Hi, John. "I just wanted to respond to the email you had in episode 51 about retrieving and sending email from behind a proxy. As a firewall engineer, I'm sorry to say that unless the proxy or firewall is configured to allow traffic through, then Thunderbird won't be able to access the ports provided by the mail provider. And the same with IRC, IM, or SSH. However, he may be able to tunnel to work around it using a program called Stunnel." Okay, this is the word tunnel with an S before it. "Which will tunnel traffic using SSL or with port forwarding over SSH. Not all proxies or firewalls will permit this, and your network administrator might be extremely upset at you running some software to bypass their carefully configured security boundary. I know I would be." Your listener also says they use Gmail. "So I suspect the easiest way to proceed will be to just use the Gmail website, as this is unlikely to be blocked. I'd be happy to discuss this with your listener if you want to pass my email address. Regards, John Spriggs, LPIC1 Certified." I don't know what that means, but it's impressive.
It sure is. Well, thanks, John. And John also goes by the handle John the Nice Guy on the forums and other places on the net, and he truly is a nice guy. In fact, John has offered to mirror our Going Linux site for us. Although my progress has been slow in getting this done, I've been working with John to actually get it up and running. Soon, we should have a mirror for the goinglinux.com site up and running.
Excellent. And now, is he just going to store the pages, or?
Well, the way I understand it works is that we just copy the entire site over to his server, and it's another link to goinglinux.com that people can go to. And the nice thing is, if our site's down, his will be up, and vice versa.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Thanks, John. You really are a nice guy.
Next, Will in Indy wrote, Larry and Tom finally took your advice and got a nice, inexpensive refurb MP3 player compatible with Rockbox. I installed Rockbox open source firmware upgrade version 3.0 on the Sansa E250.
That's what I've got, and I love it.
All automated, easy installation. Very, very nice. Up all night learning the new menu system. Dozens of languages. I can manage files on a plain medium blue screen with white type. No silly icons. Beautiful clear file list. Hundreds of customizable settings. Includes several bookmark options. File hold and pause and resume. Bookmarks of any file. Various speed fast forward and variable skip ahead intervals for commercials, variable LCD luminescence and timeouts for daytime use. This little gadget is now much more versatile and easier to use than with Sansa's stupid crippled software. I need to buy a micro SD chip to extend the RAM. I'm going to wear this little gadget out. Woo-wee! Will from Indy.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think about it. I've got the Sansa E250 with Rockbox, and Rockbox really does rock. There are so many features. You don't have to dig into all the features, but if you like that kind of thing, it's quite the playground in there.
Yeah, it sounds like Will has dug right in, and in fact, he's given us a better review than some of the review sites have.
Right. One little toy that's on there that I really like is text-to-speech. So, as you're rolling through a menu, as you stop on each item, it will say what that item is.
Oh, great. That'd be handy for the visually impaired.
For the visually impaired and somebody who's driving.
Aha, yes.
And if I'm driving, I can just put one finger into my shirt pocket and slowly scroll up and down a menu, and it says what that item is. And when I get to where I want to be, I push the big round button in the middle, it selects that one, and off we go.
Very nice.
It really is. And I will do a demonstration of Rockbox talking. Okay, here's me turning on the player. Rockbox is booting up, and it says...
Files.
Battery
level 43%.
That's another feature. It can tell you what the battery level is. And it said files, and now it's going to say database as I scroll down the menu.
Database.
Resume playback.
Resume playback.
Settings.
Settings.
Recording.
Recording.
FM radio.
FM radio.
Plugins.
Playlists.
Oh, I'm sorry, playlists. Next is plugins.
Plugins.
And system.
System.
And so there you get the idea. Rockbox.com, people, if you haven't seen it.
You bet. Next, Ken wrote us a brief note. Hi, guys. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Ken.
Just discovered your show recently and wanted to tell you how much I liked it. I've actually been using Linux regularly for a couple of years now, but I'm always finding something I need to learn about it. I plan to listen to some of your previous shows and look forward to the upcoming ones as well. Take care, Ken.
Thanks, Ken. That's great feedback, and we're glad we can help.
Yes, and we're happy to have you as a new listener.
Yeah, welcome aboard. Next, listener Jason wrote us with a problem. Hi, Larry and Tom.
Hi, Jason.
Hi, Jason. I've been listening to the podcast for a while now, and you've really helped me to get comfortable with Linux. I've been running Ubuntu 8.04 on a 5-year-old Dell Inspiron 1100 laptop for a while now, and it really has breathed new life into this machine. Unfortunately, after upgrading last week to 8.10, I have discovered that the Intel integrated graphics chipset on this laptop appears to be unsupported, and I'm having trouble finding a compatible graphics driver. My graphics chip is the Intel 82845G/GL/GE. Can you point me in the right direction, or should I just reinstall 8.04? Thanks, and keep up the good work. Jason. Thanks, Jason.
Yes, and I wrote back to Jason. I've heard that Ubuntu 8.10 broke compatibility with some video drivers. That's very unfortunate. Since Ubuntu has new releases about every 6 months, I would reinstall 8.04 and wait for 9.04. Chances are the support for your video driver will be back again with that update. If you feel adventuresome, I could investigate whether there is a third-party driver or configuration fix for your card. On the other hand, if you're looking to simply get up and running again, 8.04 might be your best bet, at least temporarily. And then Jason wrote back saying, "Thank you, Larry, for getting back to me in such a timely manner. I actually looked around for a third-party driver and found one from Intel. I couldn't seem to get it installed, so I did exactly what you suggested. I reinstalled 8.04. Everything is working again. I'm kind of disappointed that I can't run the latest and greatest, but really, I'm just glad this machine runs at all. I've been stretching this computer for a while now, determined to make it last as long as possible. I'll try a newer release again when it's time for a new computer, but for now, I'll stick with what I know works. Thanks again for the advice."
Okay, and our next email is from Mark. "Hi, Larry and Tom," and in parenthesis, insert "Hi, Mark" in unison here.
Hi, Mark.
"Just to follow up on my email that you mentioned in episode 54, as you noted, Klaatu and I went back and forth, and although he had some good ideas and was very gracious, we both learned something about the PowerBook G3 Wall Street that we didn't know. It appears that this model, and not the other models released during the same year, is an old world Mac, which requires the operating system OS 9 to always be on the hard drive and boot first before booting another operating system. In researching how to do this, it became clear that installing Zubuntu was going to be a major time suck and quite difficult. Both Klaatu and I were surprised. I have attached one of many links that lay out the difficulties converting the Black Wall Street model for others to see. I may yet tackle this conversion, but it's going to be set aside for a really rainy, snowy, boring day. This is one serious project." And he provided a link that we'll put in the show notes. Mm-hmm. Continuing, he says, "On the brighter side, I recently installed Zubuntu 8.1 on my parents' older Dell computer using Wubi. The Windows XP that was installed on it was taking 10 to 15 minutes to boot up." 10 to 15 minutes?
Yeah, I've seen that.
Wow. "Now, Ubuntu loads in just a couple of minutes and runs perfectly. I guess I'm batting 500, which is a pretty good average. Keep up the good work, guys. Mark." Thanks, Mark.
Yes, thanks, Mark. And so, for anyone having problems installing Linux on this particular version of the PowerBook G3, we'll share Mark's link in the show notes.
And on that note, it looks like we've caught up on our listener feedback from December, and we're a good portion of the way into January as well. Since we have about a dozen more email messages from our listeners, let's carry those forward until next month and wrap up the show. Before we do, there have been a couple of new Linux podcasts on the scene lately, haven't there, Larry?
Yes, indeed. Listener Jeff Smith wrote us to tell us that he has started a new podcast with some of his friends. It's the Free Linux Helpline podcast. It's a live call-in show that aims to help Linux users with their questions. They're on their third episode and can be found at freelinuxhelpline.net.
And that sounds familiar, except for the live call-in show part. I wonder how they manage that.
I think maybe we could figure out how to help Linux users. What do you think, Tom?
I think we can help, but I don't think that we need more things to do at this point, like setting up a live call in.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think we could ever do this thing live.
And we have a new podcast, the Linux Geekdom podcast at Linux Geekdom, that's LinuxGeekdom.com. And that's by AJ, a regular listener to our show. And he finally has his site set up, feeds working, and episodes 1 and 2 recorded. He also has a promo. Let's play it now.
Hey there. Do you consider yourself a geek? Do you consider yourself knowledgeable in the field of computers? Do you become quickly frustrated working with those less apt at working with computers? Then maybe the Linux Geeks podcast is right for you. Hey, I'm AJ. In it, we consider more advanced topics that others dare not venture into. We discuss such things as creating file systems for universal access across all platforms, advanced commands in the command line, and using everyday programs for not-so-everyday reasons. Whether you are a beginner looking to pick up a neat tip, or an advanced user looking for a new way to do something, this is the podcast for you. This podcast is about giving back in the spirit of Ubuntu. Ubuntu Linux is what I run and what I will be discussing. The open source community is about supporting one another. That is what I hope to do here. Like a Roman marketplace where an interchange of knowledge and wisdom took place, I want you to teach me as much as I want to help you. Knowledge is power, and with it much good can be done. Certainly, I don't know everything, but I can't wait to share with you what I do know. We will have listener feedback episodes, along with segments in each show called Command of the Week and Program of the Week. I hope you can benefit greatly from this podcast and look forward to the journey through Linux we will share. For more, go to the Linux Geekdom site at linuxgeekdom.com, LinuxGeekdom.com. Thanks for listening. Talk to you later.
Great. Good luck with your new podcasts, Jeff and AJ.
Yes, absolutely. Our next episode is a Computer America episode number 11. Until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information and detailed instructions with screenshots.
Email us with comments, questions, and suggestions. And remember, if you have a topic suggestion, use the Podcast Alley button to leave your topic suggestion while you vote for us on their site. Send us an audio comment by email, and we'll play it on the show. And that address is goinglinux@gmail.com.
You can download our shows from our website, or you can use the Flash Player right there on the page to play them and listen to them right there on the page.
You can also get future episodes delivered directly to your computer automatically as soon as a new episode is available. Instructions on how to do that are on the website.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com. Whether you've merely heard of Linux or consider yourself an expert, here's your chance to learn more about it at the Southern California Linux Expo. For 2009, Scale 7X has added two new tracks for developers and beginners. We'll have over 60 speakers who will cover the latest topics in open source software, and the expo floor will have more than 80 booths featuring commercial and nonprofit organizations showing their products and software. The Friday special sessions have returned with DOCS, the Open Source Conference for Healthcare. Women in Open Source will reprise their conference, as will the Open Source Software and Education Conference. The Southern California Linux Expo is February 20th, 21st, and 22nd, 2009, at the Westin LAX Hotel in Los Angeles. For more information or to register for the expo, visit socallinuxexpo.org. Use promo code CAST, C-A-S-T, for 40% off of your registration, and we'll see you at Scale 7X.